there, it really doesn't matter that Colin Peterson hails from the 7th District of Minnesota, which is pretty much the western side of the state of Minnesota. It matters most that you produce, whether you're living in Crosby, North Dakota, or whether you're living in Estillen, South Dakota. What you're about to hear matters to you. The Farm Bill. Will this get done by the end of the year? Congressman Colin Peterson is in studio with us, and he is a member of that House Ag Committee. He's the ranking member of the Democrat side. Congressman, good to have you back in studio.
Glad to be with you, Joel.
I mean, do you even know what to predict here? I mean, where are we going?
Well,
with this?
I've been up and down, and people are getting tired of hearing from me, I'm sure, because
actually, I don't one
think
day
so. I'm
I think
pessimistic,
honest.
And one day I'm optimistic. Right now, on Thursday, we came to a tentative agreement on the commodity title. We sent the finally after it was, this was supposed to have been done 3 weeks ago. Finally, had an agreement to send over to CBO. To score this in terms of what we're going to base the target prices and acre program or the revenue program on. And that was sent over to CBO Thursday afternoon. And we were supposed to hear back this morning. We haven't heard yet. We're expecting to get those scores sometime today. If that scores in the range of what we've been talking about to this point on the commodity title, then I think we're in the range to get this thing finished. And so the idea would be for us to get back together tomorrow to come to a tentative agreement, hopefully tomorrow or Wednesday. And we would like, if and I don't think this is going to happen, but it would be good if it did, we'd like to have a public conference committee to put out the deal that we had agreed to, you know, the four leaders, because there's going to be people upset. And give that public conference committee the opportunity to offer amendments and complain.
Right.
So we can kind of lock the thing down. Now, but we're not going to have language. You know, we're going to have just kind of like the
letter of
the
law. You're not going to have that.
Yeah, the Senate Finance Committee does this all the time. They do conference committee markups on, you know, the agreement. And so what we're hoping is to get through that process by the end of the week, so that we can take from the end of the week until January 7th when we come back to actually write the language, get everything CBO finalized, get everything locked down. As soon as we come back on the 7th or 8th, have the members of the conference committee sign the report, get it on the floor, get it passed. Now, I still wonder, and I can't talk too much specifics about what's in the bill, but what this is looking like it's going to be at the end of the day will pass the Senate. I'm not worried about that. But I'm not sure it'll pass the House. So even if we get the conference committee gets this together and even if we sign it, I'm not sure it's going to pass.
So what,
it's going to take a lot of Democrats to pass this.
What enemies on the horizon are there in the House?
Well, there's all kinds of enemies because people are all over the map. And it goes back to this divide that was created in June. We had a bipartisan bill. I had 13 of the 21 Democrats in favor of that bill. I had gone up on food stamps to accommodate the Republicans at that time. And the idea was we're going to all stick together and, you know, move the thing through.
Lucas will deliver his caucus, you'll deliver
yeah,
yours.
Yeah, right. Well, what happened is they went back on the deal. Lucas didn't, but Cantor did. They started offering amendments to food stamps. And I started losing votes. You know, that's what happened. You know, so they'd have left. And so they went up to $40 billion from 20, you know, and the Senate wasn't right. going to do 20 in the first place. So they just made a more difficult situation. You know, the other problem that they created on the House floor, because there was misinformation put out and I wasn't able to get ahead of it, on the dairy thing, they took the stabilization fund out of my dairy program, which means it's not going to work. It's going to cost the taxpayers billions of dollars. And we are not, the dairy industry and myself, are not going to agree to that. You know, we're not going to put a program that's going to put $10 billion of more spending on the taxpayers. That's what that amendment did, that Boehner pushed in the House. So that was a problem. That cost me 10 votes.
Well, there's a lot of people who believe that that movement back in June wasn't really about passing a farm bill.
It
was about killing a farm bill.
Well, it looked like it was. I mean, I don't know what else you can say about it. You know, This was the Heritage Foundation, Club for Growth, those people.
It was the Tea Party that did.
Yeah. Well, that have been for years wanting to split the farm bill, split it, you know, the farm bill from the food stamps. This has been a policy out of the Heritage Foundation for 20 years. Nobody paid any attention to it until Eric Cantor, who's now in a position to do something, picked it up.
Well, I know now, you don't get into local politics, but I'm mad because my congressman and the congressman to the south of me, Christy Noem and Kevin Kramer, both supported all that. They voted for all that. So here we sit, and we've got to have this deal cut. This deal's got to get cut.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem. I mean, you know, they have been supportive, Christy and Kevin. But when it gets down to this partisan stuff, you know, most people stick on their sides, you know, and we've never had that problem before in agriculture. We've never had a situation where the ag bill has become partisan. But that's what they did in June. They made it a partisan bill for the first time. And that's why we're having such a hard time getting this done. So, you know, we need to get this over with. And what they agreed to on Thursday, I don't like. I don't think it's right. I don't agree with it. But I said, go ahead and do whatever you have to do. We got to get this thing done. They're going to use base acres to do these programs on the commodity title, which means we're going to be paying people that aren't farming. This is the fight we just went through over direct payments.
Yeah.
Now we're going to do it backwards. With counter-cyclicals, you know, and you can't defend this. You know, and the other thing it does, it puts the power in the hand of the landowners, not the farmers, because the payments follow the land and the base that you have on your land, not what the farmer is planting. You know, and
what you just described means cash rent went up.
Yeah, right. Well, or it won't go down. Now, the corn growers this morning are predicting they're going to lose money the next 4 years. It's looking like that's probably true. And one of the problems we have, the reason they're going to lose money, is the cost structure of growing corn has gone up so much. You know, now we're $4.50 a bushel cost, you know, because the land went up and the rent went up and everything went up, you know. The only way you're going to get this back in balance is for those costs to come down. That means land rent's got to come down. Land prices have to come down. Well, if you have a system that's going to prop up land rent, that's the wrong direction, you know. And so what we were trying to do was put a program underneath farmers' production that said, you know, if you did okay, if you were making money and you had a good crop, we're not going to pay you anything. But if these prices collapse, we're going to put a floor under them. That's what we're trying to do. But what's going to end up happening here, it looks like, is not going to be that. I think it's a mistake. And I think we're heading for problems down the road in agriculture. And this bill is not going to be the solution. Is it going to, you know, be better than nothing? Yes, but it's not the right thing for the long term, in my opinion. But I'm not going to stand in the way because we got the sugar program in the bill, you know, the way they want it. We're going to have the dairy program in the bill, you know, the way it'll work. So I was able to win some battles, and I'm in the minority, so I can't run the show. And you know, all I can do is offer my advice, and people that are in charge will do what they're going
to
do.
Well, we come back to what-if scenario. Here's the what-if scenario, and I got a chance to speak with Congressman Peterson about this earlier off-air, about what if nothing happens? And I think you need to hear from your congressman about that. Also, he's available to you. I mean, he's in studio right now. He's not out in D.C. on as tight of a schedule. He can take a phone call, 237-5948, 1-800-880-5346.
Of doing a one-month extension, which I think is a mistake and is not necessary. But Boehner said that here a few days ago. So it's possible they might decide to do that this week, but
don't believe in the $8 a gallon.
Well, and that's not going to happen because if the permanent law is implemented on the 1st of January in dairy, what happens is the secretary is required to do what he can do to try to get the price of milk up to 75% of parity, which is about $38 a hundredweight for farmers, which is about a little over two times what they're getting now. But what he's going to do to get to do that is he's not going to pay the farmer that. He's going to buy butter because it's in surplus. He's going to buy powder going to buy some cheese, get it off the market, try to short the market, drive the price up. That's how it works. It may work. It may not work.
What's he do with that product he bought?
Ship it overseas. But you remember when we went through the cheese, maybe you're too young, but we stored all the cheese and everything back, and we had that big surplus back in the 80s or 70s, whenever it was. Those caves are still available.
We could have been storing my Ranger in there.
Okay. So we could be storing, so that, it's a terrible idea to implement the permanent law, but it's not going to be, these press people that are putting out stuff that it's going to go to $8 a gallon on January 1st is completely untrue. It'll take 3-4 months before the prices go up any significant amount.
Okay.
If they go up at all.
Let's get to the phone calls. And Al, you are on with Congressman Colin Peterson. Go ahead, hey, Al.
Thanks for taking my call this morning, Joel. Congressman, it's kind of a different subject, but I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Okay.
There's rumbles out there that you are not going to be running for another term, and that you may already be throwing your support in for a former judge in our area. And I'm just wondering, is it more because of the frustration that's going on in Washington right now, or do you just feel that you're or is this completely false?
I'm running. I filed my paperwork. I've been raising money. In fact, I've got a fundraiser at noon today. So at this point, I'm running, and I've never officially announced until like February. I try to, wait and keep the political season out of it as long as possible. This particular year, with what's going on with the farm bill, I don't want to get into a political situation. We got enough trouble with this farm bill without bringing politics into it. So I want to get this farm bill out of the way, and then we can move on with the political process after that. But right now, I'm raising money, moving ahead.
237-5948, 1-800-880-5346. Neil, you are on with Congressman Peterson. Go ahead, Neil.
Yes, Congressman. I'm from Douglas County.
Uh-huh.
You're my congressman.
Yep.
Would you, and I'm a supporter of Ron Paul, would you agree with him that he said before we pick a fight with food SNAP and helping out our fellow farmers that we should maybe cut back on giving foreign aid to countries that hate us?
I agree with him, and I've supported that during my time in Congress.
Well, I think, one thing about Neil, he's consistent. He calls in often to the show, and I like that about Neil. He always points out that we should worry about our own first.
Absolutely, and I agree with that. And we are, in what we're doing on the farm bill, is we're cutting back. We're going to cut back food stamps. We're going to cut back on the farm programs. We're cutting back across the board. And we're the only committee that's doing that. So we are doing our share, but I think we have to be looking at some of the stuff that we're doing overseas. As he said, we're giving money to people that don't really like us.
Let's talk about other things involving the federal government. You know a lot about the intelligence of our country. You served and had access to things you can't tell me about on air. But people like Facebook and Microsoft and others are coming out saying, you know what, the government is spying on its citizens way too much. They need to stay out of the private citizens' business. What's going on here?
Well, I'm not on the committee anymore and haven't been for quite a while, but I did have the opportunity to go through the NSA back when they were putting this metadata thing together. General Hayden gave me a personal walkthrough and explanation of what they were doing. What they're doing is processing what calls took place. They're not listening to any calls, as I was explained. What they're looking at is there a number in the U.S. that's hooked up to a number overseas that is a terrorist situation? That's what they flag. And so, as far as I know, they're not listening in on people's conversations, and they're not, they're just doing this kind of data mining that's done in a lot of different areas to try to, see if there's people in the U.S. that are talking to bad people overseas.
Have we as a country given them too much free rein?
Well, I think the people that are on the Intelligence Committee now are the ones that have this information, and they're the ones that need to decide is what's going on appropriate. And I trust them. Mike Rogers, former FBI agent, is chairman of the committee in the House. Dutch Ruppersberger from Baltimore is the head Democrat. I know both of them very well. I trust them. And they're the ones that are going to have to make the call on this. You know, I'm not in the loop anymore to know exactly what's going on.
I think so many people do things through social media and other ways of communicating that they don't want their mother to see. You know, I had a friend tell me the other night at VFW, he says, I don't want my mother to see some of the pictures I've sent over my cell phone.
Yeah, well, that could be. But I don't think the NSA is looking at pictures, you know, or listening in on conversations. What they're doing is, you know, running, the cops are doing this. You know, the cops are, you know, going in and getting information about calls that are made, you know, in a certain period of time when the crime is taking place and so forth. So that's going on, too, you know.
Congressman, when we come back, an interesting take on Washington itself from someone who's been there so long. Stick around. Welcome back to News and Views. We're going to take it a little different route with Congressman Peterson. You know, your time in office, you were first elected to Congress in what year?
90.
I mean, so you've been there a while.
Right.
I mean, you've been there and you've seen presidents come and go. You've seen senators come and go. You've met with just about every leader that you can, both on a national and international scale. For someone young, for someone my daughter's age who you know, looks at politics on the horizon and they say, you know, it's still worthwhile. It's still worth doing. But my God, do I really want to live that life? I mean, what's your advice to them?
Well, it's been a tremendous opportunity for me to be able to do what I've been able to do. You know, as you said, you get to meet people that you'd never meet otherwise. It's like getting three college educations, you know, to learn all this stuff. And I've been able to do a lot of things for my constituents, you know, not only legislatively, but probably more important, you know, on a casework basis, helping them through problems. Mm-hmm. So it's been a great, great experience, and I think it would be a great experience for anybody that got involved in politics. But it is, I've never seen anything like what's going on now. Yeah, it is very frustrating, and I think people know that I've been frustrated with what's been going on here the last year or two. But it ebbs and flows, and there's been other times in my career when it's been frustrating, and it, you know, it moves on to something else. And it, you know, the American people at the end of the day always do the right thing. It may take them longer than it should. You know, it may take them a while to figure out we got to go in some different direction, but they will figure it out. And, you know, things will change, and we'll, at the end of the day, do the right thing. So I am optimistic about the country, about, you know, America. But right now, it is hard to say to anybody that what's going on in Washington is a is something that makes a whole lot of sense. It's gotten so partisan and so out of whack.
Is it safe to say that your colleagues across the aisle from you in the House will never, in the tenure of this presidency, work with this president?
Well, it doesn't look like it. And you know, you need to understand that position is something that their constituents apparently support. You know, it's partly because of redistricting and what happened where we made these partisan districts, and there's very few districts left in the country that are like mine that could go either way. That's part of the problem. But you've got, you know, a new breed that's been elected the last couple of elections that just don't talk to people in the other party at all. And that's not just Republicans. It's also Democrats because of the districts they're in. And they're not worried about you being challenged by the other party. They're worried about being challenged in their own party, which moves the Republicans further to the right, moves the Democrats further to the left, and there's fewer people in the middle. And that's part of why we have this dysfunction. You
know? If I were Nancy Pelosi and I knew that and I had these let's say, more urban congressmen and women who really look at things just strictly through the eyes of their own district and don't look nationally. And I couldn't – I found myself in the minority, which she finds herself. I would be reaching out to the Colin Petersons of the world. I'd be saying, go out there. Here's the olive branch. Let's find out what we can do. Go cut me the best deal you can. Find out if there's any wiggle room here or there. You'd be one of my chief lieutenants.
Well, and I have a great relationship with Nancy Pelosi, and we politically probably couldn't be further apart, you know, but we can work together. She was instrumental in me being able to get the farm bill done last time in 2008 and helped me get 317 votes to override two vetoes. You know, she's been rock solid supporting that, and she's been rock solid supporting us in this process. And she has, I've kept her appraised of what's going on here, and she is working with us to hopefully be able to have a bill at the end of the day where we can deliver a significant amount of Democrats in the House to get this thing done and finalized. And so she's been great. You know, and I know a lot of my constituents won't believe that she's, when I say this, but I think of all the leadership in the House and Senate, she has been the strongest in supporting agriculture of any of them.
See,
even
you,
though that's not what's viewed by a lot of
people. You know, and I know that you get no political gain back home by saying that.
I know.
But yet you say
that's
it.
The truth.
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons I guess I respect you. Let's get to Jim. Jim, you're on with Congressman Peterson. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I got a question for the congressman. Is there, in the new farm program, is there any changes been made in the oversight in the preventive planning part of the farm bill, which I don't know if you're aware, but there's a lot of fraud going on among farmers who don't even make an attempt to seed a crop, and year after year they get a payment. It paints all farmers with a bad image, and especially among people who don't farm.
A lot of people echo what Jim just said.
No, I
get a lot of calls on
well,
that.
There's that's been an issue. I can't, again, get into too much of the details here, but that's been an issue that's been discussed at some length in the commodity title deliberations. We are ramping up more data mining in crop insurance to get at this, and we have actually made significant progress in nailing people that are doing those kinds of things where they shouldn't be. But I have to tell you, there are people involved in this process that are trying to loosen prevented planting to make it more wide open as opposed to the other way. And, you know, the RMA, the Risk Management Agency that oversees crop insurance, has been trying to tighten this up, you know, and limit how much you can get prevented planting. And there's been pushback from some politicians against that, you know. So this is one of the things that will, if we get this thing settled this week, these one of the things we will be deciding and settling in the process. But
where are you at on it?
Well, I think we need to tighten up. There are, and I've said this and gotten in trouble, that frankly, there's more abuses in crop insurance than there is in food stamps, you know, and we're cracking down on that. But, you know, I did convince the conference committee to put money in for data mining in food stamps. We have done a good job of, you know, we're down to like 3% error rate or something in food stamps, and we're above that in crop insurance. That's not good enough, and we're doing more data mining to, you know, which focuses where these problems are. We're now going to do data mining in food stamps. And the problem is not with the people that are getting the stamps or using them. The problem is with these little stores that are making a deal with somebody and splitting the money. And we can identify that if we do data mining. So I'm for reforming the system and cleaning it up. You know, we have hardly anybody in this country anymore that understands what we do in agriculture. You know, we can't afford to be having a program that you can't defend. And that's my concern about where we're heading with this final farm bill, because I think we're leaving in place some things that are very hard to defend, and I think that's going to be a problem in the long term.
You're out there doing it. I'm back home here supporting it on the radio, pushing for a farm bill, saying that we still need a good ag policy for this nation. And I got beat up last week, Congressman, from people saying, you know what, Joel, you're just blind to what's happening around you. You're missing the late 20, early 30-year-olds who now have $500,000 homes and new $40,000 pickups, and you're trying to protect them when they have never had to go out in the workplace and ever find out about life. Well, what's your answer to that?
Well, unfortunately, those people are going to find out about life in the next couple, 3 years. And the question's going to be, is it going to be as bad as the 80s? I don't think so, because there's not as much debt. You know, people have had 3, 4, 5 good years. Young farmers that have started have got a, you know, built up some equity. But I think we're going to go through some tough times from everything that we're looking at. And, you know, what we're trying to do, the crop insurance has been the main safety net. And it's worked well through this process of higher prices, because what it does, it allows you to lock in your revenue and your yields, or your, you know, production. And when you have higher prices, that almost guarantees you, the banker, that you're going to make it. But what happens now this year? Say corn gets down to 375. What happens is, on the crop insurance, all you can insure on your revenue policy is 375. You know, so so all of a sudden, you've got a situation where you can't lock in
what you need, what to, you need. Even to get by.
Right. And what's going to happen then? What's the banker going to do?
Well, and it isn't stopping them from going out and section of land back home. I had a conversation with a gentleman this morning, and you had some very young farmers out there spending $6,000-$7,000 an acre.
Well,
you know, but the only difference is, Congressman, is much of what they're paying for isn't being financed anymore.
That's right. And so how this is going to shake out, you know, I don't know. But, you know, the prices that are being paid for land and the prices that are being paid for rent are not justified, even with the higher prices that we had for commodities.
Yeah.
With lower prices, it's going to be a bigger problem, you know. So what we're trying to do in the Farm Bill is provide people a safety net, get them through if things collapse, but not guarantee them a profit, you know, and that's what we're trying to do.
Congressman, I know you got another meeting. When this thing shakes out and breaks out, we'll give you a call.
Okay, good enough.
Thank you. Congressman Colin Peterson.